Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 265 featuring Koki Nagano, who is the principal scientist over at Pinscreen. Really cool guy. I met Koki back when he was getting his PhD at ICT with Paul Debevec, or under Paul Debevec. And he and I did a bunch of work on the WikiHuman project together. Really interesting stuff. And we talk a lot about that. Kristen, this was a very techie podcast.
Yes.
It was a very techie podcast, and we talk a lot about digital humans. But what were some of the, you were able to grab some interesting insights. I look at your notes here, and it's like you really picked up on some interesting things. What did you find out about?
Well, I listened to your interview, and then I ended up listening to this TED Talk, which is really fun as well. But it's more deep fake discussions. And my thing I picked up was so at Pinscreen, it's like it's the AI driven personal avatars that they all get from a single photograph that you can upload.
Yeah.
And this uses advanced CGI and AI technology to create a realistic 3D digital avatar that looks and behaves like us. And
Right.
then he kind of, on the TED Talk as well, he did a real-time demo of the face swapping and stuff. And
right. So it's not just that you can create an avatar. You can actually use it to puppeteer other faces. There's a bunch of deep fake stuff they can do with this. They do a lot of very interesting work. And this is under Hao, who owns the company, and Koki was working with him over at ICT and is now the principal scientist there. This also ties in very closely to what was going on with Wael, the conversation we had with him, right?
Yep.
So this is a continuing conversation about what deepfakes are doing, how they're made, how to detect them, their responsibility. We talk about ethics in there as well. So it was a really cool thing. And I really like Koki. He's a very, very smart Koki. So I'm really impressed with the work he's doing and really curious about where it's going to go. And the responsibilities that people like him have to the work that they're doing as well, which is also a very important part of it. All right, let's get on to some announcements. What's going on, Kristen?
All right, you can find all of our events over at chaosgroup.com/events.
Yeah.
Of course, we have Total Chaos, which is coming up May 29th to 31st in Sofia, Bulgaria. And you can go find all the information about this event at chaosgroup.com/totalchaos.
That's right. And so there's a lot of cool stuff going on there. Lots of great speakers. And like I've been mentioning in the previous episodes, tickets are running out fast. So don't wait till the last minute to get a ticket. If you don't get one, you may not be able to come at all. Other things I want to say real quick is I will be going to the Real Time Conference in New York City. It's actually a conference that's happening simultaneously in New York City and Paris on April 6th and 7th. So I will be attending that conference. It's the first year. Very excited to find out more about the Real Time Conference. There's a lot of cool people that are going there. I also wrote a blog post about V-Ray Benchmark, and that's out on our blog section. So just go to vray.com/blog. And check out our blog section there. I wrote one on Benchmark. I'm actually writing one right now that I know will be out in a month or so. Who knows? It's going to take me a while to get it on specifically out of core GPU rendering. And we had an announcement. What else came out recently? Lavina,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Lavina.
So Lavina is our real-time ray tracer that we've been working on, and it's available for beta testing for anyone who has a V-Ray license. If you guys want to check it out, where can I go, Kristen?
You can go to chaosgroup.com/Lavina.
Right, perfect. So that will give you more information on that. And if people want to follow this podcast, where can they go?
Facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Or
chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And if you guys have any comments or ideas or thoughts or anything, just go to labs@chaosgroup.com, email us there, and let us know what you think or any feedback or suggestions. We'd love to hear from you. With that being said, please enjoy episode number 265 with Koki Nagano.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, You need to make sure everything has fun now.
So, Cookie, let's go ahead and start this. So, when you and I guess the first time we really met and talked was when we were working on the WikiHuman project, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think met for the first time. There was also Vlado, you, and Paul, and maybe a few others at the ICT conference room. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were talking about what we were going to do for the project and how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun and really interesting stuff that we did back then. And we have a lot to talk about digital human work.
Yes.
But let's start with a little bit of origin story. How did you end up at ICT working on digital humans? What interests of yours led to that decision? You mentioned you were in architecture school, right?
My undergrad was environmental design.
Yeah.
So it was like no computer, just like drawing on a paper and create some like tiny miniature for the building. So I like all that, some kind of art design kind of things. But also at the same time, when I was very young, I have grown up watching like Godzilla, some like special effects movies. I remember watching the Lord of the Rings. I bought DVD and I had the making of things. So, and I was grown up in the countryside of Japan, so there was not that much information.
Right.
So I thought the only way to get to that industry was somehow get some like a learn how to create the art, like like miniature and those things. But somehow I ended up in like some like architectural sort of measures.
Right.
But when I was in undergrad, I took some class and I made some like media art and I submitted to SIGGRAPH when I was in a third year in the college. Yeah.
What did you submit?
It was some system which allows you to see two different images on the same screen. It uses the polarizers to show on the so in a 3D movie you can see like a right image on the So then you have like two different polarizers.
Right.
So different people can see different content. So we extended that kind of things to different applications.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, that was a small work, but that was the very first SIGGRAPH 2010 I presented at SIGGRAPH Poster. So that the SIGGRAPH 2010 was in LA.
Right.
So, and then I also wanted to study abroad for my graduate study.
Yeah.
So my advisor contacted Paul because it's close to ICT. So we got a chance to visit ICT. So that's the first time I visited ICT.
Right.
I think it was maybe only a few months since ICT moved to the current location.
The current location in Playa.
Yeah. Right.
Because it was in Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
you know, that building is also the building that they feature in Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
That's the Hooli building.
Right.
That's actually the ICT building.
Yeah. And then, when I was doing my PhD, right. I saw a few people shooting the movie and the walls are blocked. Yeah. And then also that year was the Avatar came out.
Right.
And then Paul got Academy Award.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really interested in how the technology to make those digital humans,
right.
How to create realistic.
So you were interested in digital human work based on Paul's work?
Yes. How Avatar, Lord of the Rings, Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So that got you involved. So then Paul basically got you at ICT, right?
Right, yeah.
And so that became your graduate program was going to be at ICT?
Yeah.
Okay, because when I met you, you were getting your PhD there, so it was part of your research, right?
So yeah, I finished my bachelor in Tokyo and then flew here in 2012 to start my PhD at USC.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what I think we should let people know is like one of the things that you were doing your work on digital humans. I was working with Paul and Jay and who else was there?
Shimin Graham.
And
Oleg was there.
Yeah. And we were looking at, you know, just creating this open data set that people could use for research. And we had the digital Emily data, which was kind of raw, but we took that data and we made it to something that was a little bit more usable, which ended up becoming the open source data. Mm. But then you ended up using it for your own research, right?
Right, right.
So can you explain people what that research was?
Yeah, so I have been working on so there was a previous work by Paul Graham and different PhD student on how to digitize the human skin at the micro scales.
Right.
Like a hundredth of a millimeter.
Right.
So, poor
level.
Yeah. Even beyond the light stage capability at that time.
Right.
So that work can digitize the face at extremely super high resolution.
Right.
So I was looking into what happens to those structures when for example, smiles,
right.
The skin stretches and compresses, and how the skin structures changes and how it influences the skin reflectance, BLDF, and
right.
all those things. So then 2015, we submitted...
So just so people understand, because not everyone will... You and I understand this, but some people... So basically, your pores have a certain structure, but if you look at your cheek, for example... It's broken up by all the pores and little micro wrinkles we put between those pores. But if you blow up your cheeks, those get stretched out and there's less breakup of the skin. It gets shinier.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was your research. What happened? Cause you guys had scanned that data, but you're like, well, what happens to that data when your face changes? Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, so we were working on that project maybe for a year or so.
Right.
Basically extending the light stage capability to scan that at that resolution and with animation, basically.
Right.
So we submitted that work to SIGGRAPH 2015. That was accepted as SIGGRAPH technical papers.
Yep.
And then, another thing was that I wanted to create some digital human, not just doing some research. I wanted to see lifelike digital human.
Right.
Paul has many films that features his papers. So
yeah.
I also wanted to do something similar.
Mm-hmm.
So then there was this opportunity just came in, and then we just have a new technique that can render the human skin at super high res. So.
Right.
Yeah, that was very nice.
It was cool. And I mean, people should check it out. I'm sure we'll put a link to the paper, but you guys can check out the videos that we were working on. It was really great to be able to support you and to help you get all the renders that you guys needed for that stuff, because it ended up looking really great. And I think it's an extremely interesting thing to think about. What you guys were doing back then at ICT was just – the most high resolution detail you could ever imagine on humans, like very, 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 very high resolution. And that was part of the interesting thing was like, if I have data that's that high res, is that going to make my digital human look better? Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. So the data, to basically create the digital human, I spent a lot of time rendering the digital anything, but I'm not an artist, so I didn't have any previous experience in how to make these.
Right.
But the idea was if we had an accurate database, then maybe someone like me can even set up a renderer and can set the shader parameters and all the settings right, and then maybe we can recreate the digital human
without going
through different or weird tricks to make it look right.
I think that I 100% agree with. I think one of the things that's really cool about your stuff, if you're really trying to recreate a digital human, get as much information that you know is a constant, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we had to start the process by capturing the data.
Yep.
To capture that details at that resolution, so we had to capture the skin samples at five regions, forehead, temple, nose, cheek, and chin.
Right. Explain why, because it's
Because actually, the skin region of the different region of the skin within the same person is more different than the skin patch of the different people's skin patch of the same region. For example, yeah, my forehead looks more different than. So my forehead and your forehead looks more like similar. Like for example, it moves like up and down anatomically.
Right.
So it develops more like vertical and horizontal
wrinkles. Yeah.
Yeah, wrinkles. But my cheek, it can move anywhere. So it's more like isotropic. And on the other hand, nose doesn't move that much.
Right.
So there is not that much like wrinkles and. They're only,
but you can't capture all of the face at that resolution.
Yeah, so if we can, then we're basically done.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can't, so you capture patches, right?
So, yeah, so we capture the patches,
mm-hmm.
But using these patches, we can propagate all these, basically the details to entire face.
Right.
And then we can create the, 16K by 16K resolution details.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And we've used that on the digital Emily data as well, and it looks incredible, and the digital mic one as well.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of amazing. Okay. So so you created that microstructure data, and you used it to look at skin stretching and pulling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did you do that?
So I think we tried all kinds of approaches we can maybe possibly think of.
Okay.
So for earlier in the project, we started looking at the physics simulation approach.
Okay.
Because this is very much like the surface, mm-hmm. so there is cloth simulation type of thing.
Oh, cloth sim. Yeah.
Basically, it's just a wrinkle simulation. So there are many kinds of simulation technique, mass spring, cloth simulation, mm-hmm. as rigid as possible. Basically, I tried all kinds of different things.
Right.
But the skin is actually not just a single layer, not the surface. There's a volume, right? So there's an underlying volume that needs to maintain that volume.
Okay.
And the surface needs to basically move in a way that maintains the volume.
Yeah.
So it has to also somehow consider that volume. Then we started looking into more like volumetric approach, like finite element method.
Right.
One of the authors of the paper was the Professor Yanni Burbidge at USC.
Okay.
He developed the FEM library.
Okay.
So I also tried volumetric approaches.
Right.
But the problem is that this resolution is too crazy, 16K by 16K. So you can't possibly get all the polygons and simulate like regular physical simulation.
Sure.
So so we went back to the capture,
right.
And then eventually on the effect wise, what's happening is when the surface gets stretched, mm-hmm. it basically flattens out.
Right.
And when it compresses, it bunches up.
Right.
And so, and then basically, if you just look at the surface from far, it's just a statistical effect.
Right.
So when it's stretched out, the older surface normal look vertical.
Right.
So if you put the point light on.
So if you're using it as a normal map, basically you're just reduced the normal map.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So we ended up with blurring sharpening the displacement map.
Okay.
To simulate the skin stretching and compressing.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that can run on the GPU as just blur and sharpen kernel is extremely fast.
Right.
So in 2014. Yeah, we were able to render this in real time.
Wow.
Yeah, 16K. So yeah, some of the videos in the paper was actually rendered by my own OpenGL GLSL shader in real time. And many others are rendered by V-Ray.
Wow.
Yeah. Much better.
Yeah. Well, but still, I mean, it's pretty amazing to be able to think about how you're able to do that, because that's pretty incredible. Mm. The results were very cool. We'll definitely put a video link on there so people can check it out, because and if you guys are interested in the paper, they should read that, since it's an open paper. But that was your PhD paper, right?
Yeah. So that was one of my projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. So when did you get your PhD?
2017.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. That's really great. So, so since then, you were at ICT for a little bit, after that, but then you moved on to Pinscreen, right? Mm-hmm. So that is, Hao's group, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you've known Hao because Hao obviously was at ICT as well. Mm-hmm. Tell us what Pinscreen is.
So Pinscreen is a startup founded by Hao. Mm-hmm. Around maybe 2015. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like 4 or 5 years. So we are based in like around Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Mostly my current work focuses on developing some cutting edge technology for VFX, computer graphics, and vision and machine learning for basically building a realistic digital avatar.
Okay.
Something you can use for virtual assistant, or it can be used for like entertainment, like TV production or like movie productions.
Okay. Yeah. So it's an avatar of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, You're moving to the avatar through what?
So it can be like performance capture based.
Okay.
I worked on some like high fidelity but real time face tracking that can run on like a desktop. Mm-hmm. Then you can drive the avatars.
Yeah.
So we also have a lightweight version that can run on like iPhone 7 or so without depth sensors.
Without depth sensors.
Yeah.
So all image based. Right.
Yeah.
So you're capturing people's animations and faces, right?
Yeah, animations and faces. Also, to build an avatar, you need like whole body and hair. Basically, just looking at the complete how to build the complete avatar.
Does it make the avatar for you?
We have an app called Pinscreen. Uh-huh. You can download from App Store.
Uh-huh.
So how it works is if you upload an image.
Yeah.
To backend server, so all the computation is done on cloud.
Yeah,
So then it computes, digitizes the 3D face and get the like 3D hair, and also like run some deep learning stuff to get the textures, and everything, and then you can get the assets back to the front end.
Okay,
and you can like view the avatar and interact on the phone.
So how is this different from what's the Apple one that they do?
It's very related to Animoji. But the difference is Animoji you can create from a preset.
Okay.
So like only customize like the maybe like a very global skin color.
Kind of like making your avatar on the Wii or something.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's cute.
Yeah.
But
yours is based on your actual image.
Yeah, so based on the actual image and photoreal and personalized.
Right.
Yeah, so that's much more harder.
Right.
Yeah, so we can go to realistic to stylized, but we cannot go the other way around.
Right.
Basically.
You can't go from stylized to realistic, Okay, so it is still a stylized version of yourself, right?
So yeah, it looks like a game character,
right?
But eventually, the goal is that to make it something that looks indistinguishable from real you.
So you're cloning yourself digitally,
right? Yeah.
Okay. Now we are talking compared to what we were talking about when we were going into the micro details of skin texture. Mm-hmm. This is a phone picture. This is a selfie that turns into an avatar. That's not the same detail that you're getting from before, right?
Yeah. So
that's a challenge.
It's also the workflow-wise, it's very like opposite. Basically, the traditional VFX graphics pipeline is very like bottom-up, right? So you have a data like 3D model, albedo, right. and all the like render, like lighting, mm-hmm. everything needs to be set up to produce the rendering.
Right.
And then even with the best data, it's still very hard to create a very convincing digital character.
Right.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It needs a lot of expertise. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, some more like recent approach like deep learning and machine mm-hmm. learning, thing was very top-down. It's a very data-driven.
Yes.
So given some, how it works is often like given some images or videos, you throw them into some machine learning framework, and mm-hmm. then it learns how to create human facial expressions and textures and all those things without like without knowing like BLDF and all the micro things.
Right, it does yeah. it for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically this is completely different than what you were doing before.
Right.
Because before you were basically doing everything by hand. You're assuming all the, you're gathering as many of the constants or variables that you mm-hmm. needed
yeah.
from the scan data. But then you have to know the science of everything going back together.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
The thing with machine learning is that it's going to guess all that information. Because mm-hmm. that's the thing about machine learning, right? It's guessing.
Right, right, yeah.
It's giving you the best, you know, educated guess of what you mm-hmm. need to do.
Yeah.
And so that's very different.
Yeah, it's so yeah, I've been working on the like exact same problem, but from yeah, different approaches.
Do you think that the machine learning approach is going to replace the very laborious systems that we were doing before?
Yeah, so there was a very interesting comparison with the Irishman's. So the de-aging was the like probably one.
Let's
of
talk
the,
about yeah, that because yeah,
best piece of that like VFX, right?
Uh-huh.
But someone used the deepfake to
I saw that.
Yeah, like see how it might look like if the studio used the deepfake to right. create the you know the De Niro's younger. Right. Hey, look, I mean, one is done by, you know, like all the experts, month of work,
right.
Probably cost millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But the other one looks convincing, but can be done by a guy with like
in his laptop.
Regular, yeah,
yeah.
Probably a desktop.
So yeah. So I saw that, and I think we actually might have mentioned it with on the podcast with Wael as well. But I agree. I think, honestly speaking, I think that what was done by the guys at ILM and huge respect for their work, but traditionally our VFX companies tend to over-engineer and overthink problems because they think that the more complex it is, the more likely it is to be rewarded for that work when that's not really the goal.
Right.
And I think that machine learning is feels like you're cheating.
Right. Yeah.
You know? But at the same time, I think that there was a very interesting idea. And I did think honestly, I was thinking very closely about kind of the work you had done when I was seeing that, because what the ILM approach did was attack the details.
Mm-hmm.
It went in there and like basically only looked at the wrinkles
mm-hmm.
and how to take the wrinkles out and mm-hmm. smooth the skin appropriately,
mm-hmm.
reconstructed it, the face that way. But what the deep learning thing did is that it actually spent more time rebuilding the face.
Right. It's basically the replacing.
Eyes, right. The yeah. eyes weren't drooping,
mm-hmm.
you know? Basically, De Niro's face never looked, he looked like he was 55 the whole time as opposed to 75, when he needed to look like he was 30 all the way to 75.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the deep learning technique looked at the macro much more than the micro, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. So, basically it will reconstruct entire face
right.
from scratch.
Right.
So, yeah. So if the bone structure changes when like a person gets older or
I don't know if the bone structure, I think your muscles.
Maybe muscle, yeah.
Yeah.
But it will change the overall like facial structure.
Shape. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is harder for maybe like traditional approach or like a special
right.
makeup.
Right.
You can probably like remove the wrinkles and do something.
Right.
But it's more difficult to change the actual like face shape.
Right.
Yeah. But this approach can basically override the entire thing.
What? So overall, did you think that the deep fake one was more convincing? I mean, I know there's only a few examples.
I think it's very comparable, and comparing to considering how much work was needed.
Right.
Yeah.
But okay, so one of the things that was obvious to me is like the overall shape, like we just mentioned, was much more convincing. But the there was something about the resolution that wasn't quite right.
It was right.
A little too smooth. It didn't blend in correctly. You didn't have all the details.
Right.
Is that currently a limitation of the machine learning process, or what's going on there?
So right now I think probably like the current film, at least like, you know, 1080p or even higher, like 4K.
Yeah.
I think it's still the resolution is still an issue.
Okay.
So there's a lot of like frames in the film where the character comes really close to the camera. For that thing, I think this technology is still will have some difficulties.
Okay.
But think about how this technology was last year. It was like much lower resolution, much worse quality, and now
You think we will eventually get there?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I don't think it will replace the traditional approaches.
Okay.
It's just like a different way, and because like none of them are like perfect, but we can
you can use both.
Yeah, combine things.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Right. So what is okay. So you have been getting into some stuff with deepfakes recently, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's part of Pinscreen as well? Or is,
yeah.
How is, you know, you mentioned the avatar, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not really a deepfake.
Mm-hmm, right.
But there's stuff that you're using that's similar techniques to create deepfakes, or explain what you guys are doing in that area.
So, so there was a one paper I did maybe like one, two years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Basically is you can create arbitrary facial expressions of anyone from a single picture.
Okay.
So if you take a selfie, then you can use GAN, Generative Adversarial Network.
Right.
To like, this can imagine how if I smile, if I like open the mouth, it can synthesize like teeth. And if I like look left and right, it can also like fill in the textures. So
you take a single picture, and then it figures out pretty much a 3D model of your face.
It's actually a hybrid approach. So we have like a underlying 3D model.
Yeah.
But then through this 3D model, basically, the input to the neural net is also the 3D model.
Okay.
So we can use the traditional control, like a blend shape, like smile slider moves, and then we can make the person smile.
So from a still, if you take a still of me not smiling, you can use your software to make me smile.
Yeah. So basically, using this technology, we can do a virtual like fax session from a single picture.
Really?
Yeah. So
you can get all the fact shapes.
Yeah. From that angle, maybe we can do a little bit of the views.
Okay. Could you change lighting?
We can change the lighting too.
So you pretty much captured my face from a single image.
Yeah. So if you have all the different textures for the smile, you can get the wrinkles from that picture. Then all you need to do is just blend them properly. And then you can drive it in even in real time.
Okay.
So
if I could, you puppeteer it?
Yeah, we can puppeteer it. After that, it's just textures and
so
geometry.
You take a picture of me just the way I am, and then you could animate me from that single picture by doing whatever you're doing with your face.
Yeah, right. On the phone.
On the phone.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is this called?
It's called Pinscreen.
That's the Pinscreen one. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So that was developed for building a 3D avatar.
Okay.
But this capability allows anyone to like manipulate someone else's face.
Yes.
In real time. So we got a lot of requests from all the press, like LA Times or like CBS and all
people
are, interested in basically like showcasing this like new technology.
Right.
They call it deepfake.
Yeah.
It's a broader definition of deepfake, right? It's not the strict definition of deepfake.
Is there a strict definition of deepfake? Because I think people are being very liberal with the term deepfake.
Yeah, I mean, the very strict definition is the a technology to create a video of someone saying and doing something,
right,
which they never said or did.
Right.
But using deep learning technology, but when... like some like really like technical person say deepfake.
Mm-hmm.
In a most technical meaning, it means using some kind of a special encoder and decoder to do to create some like fake images. That's mm-hmm. also some kind of deep neural net.
Deep neural net.
Yeah.
Right.
But there are like all kinds of different ways to create like a fake video of someone.
Okay.
Which some of them might involve different kind of deep neural nets.
Right.
Or some of them might not even involve deep learning.
Okay.
It can be like different kind of machine learning technology.
Okay.
Or it can be some like traditional VFX. Sometimes.
Sure.
People call it deep fake. Just the definition sometimes can get loose.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this is interesting. So if you're basically using the deep learning technology. So let's go in. So deep learning, what happened technology that suddenly deep learning became a thing? Now it's in everything, right?
Right.
Is it all about the GPU and the RAM?
I think the GPU is certainly like one of the things that made it happen. GPU, but also the data. So
what are you learning from? What are you using to learn your technique?
For example, if you do just like a pure deepfake, you need maybe like tens of thousands of internet photos mm-hmm. of if you say you want to create a deepfake of Leonardo DiCaprio,
mm-hmm.
Maybe you can download some images and then
scrape the internet.
Yeah. So, and then you can build
a deepfake
model.
Right. But so that's how you guys, that's the data you use. Do you guys just scrape the internet or?
So most of the time, that's the only data that's,
available. Okay.
So the deepfake, so the data was the one thing. So there are like many more data on the internet.
Okay.
You know, like phones are getting better. I think many, many things.
Mm-hmm.
So like GPU also gets better. So allow you to train bigger, more complex.
So the quality of the pictures on the internet are getting better.
Yeah.
And the hardware is getting better at it,
right.
at interpreting it.
Yeah. So also this algorithm is very data driven. So it needs a lot of images, or it can be audio if you want to synthesize audio.
Well, you can synthesize anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just have to learn whatever data you want it to learn. It'll learn that, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So you create a deep neural network that allows you to do that. And then now you say, okay, you've learned A, B, A, B, A, B. Now I give you a new A and you tell me what B is,
mm-hmm.
right? That's
right.
really the basic definition of that, right?
But deep learning itself has a more broader definition.
Okay.
So it can be like scene recognition, like for self-driving cars.
Yes.
You have a video feed and the car needs to understand like there's a pedestrian,
right.
there's any like car coming, that's right. like like scene recognition.
Right.
Or if you want to like segment a human, that's like a segmentation.
Okay.
Also related to VFX, how to like composite the images.
Right.
Or like the text understanding, like from text, you need to like, for example, given an image, you can describe the scene using a text.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, facial recognition is also like application of the deep learning.
Right.
So it's basically just a general machine learning technology.
Right.
Which uses a special kind of algorithm called deep neural networks.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's a big thing right now, and it's a hot topic. Obviously, the press wanted to talk to you guys about it. Mm-hmm. They had, I'm sure they, based on the idea that you could puppeteer anyone, mm-hmm. not just yourself, but mm-hmm. you could puppeteer other one.
Right.
That became a concern, I'm sure, of the mm-hmm. public. So what are your thoughts on that?
So there is a... yeah, so basically now why it's a big deal is that so the technology is basically what it can do is the same thing as what the BFX has been doing for like right. I don't know, a few decades
yeah,
or maybe
but it
even
can do
more.
It way easier.
Yeah, so the difference is now the technology is accessible to anyone.
Right.
So that's the difference.
Right.
And so yeah, like maybe like similar thing happened before with Photoshop. Maybe it was difficult to create images, but yeah. now
anyone can do that.
Now this came to the video,
right?
So and I think well, no one can stop the like progress of the technology. So
okay.
eventually it'll happen, and I think we have to live with it,
right?
So yeah, but the but we have to do something at the same time, right? So we need to. Like raise the awareness of this technology.
Yeah.
So people know that you can't just blindly trust the videos anymore.
Yes.
So that's part of our work. So
you make it fake and then you show people it's fake.
Yeah, we have to. We have to. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think okay, that's an excellent point, and I've brought this up before. I think it's you're absolutely right. I think that now people don't blindly trust. Photos.
Right. Yeah. Now
because everyone knows like it's probably Photoshop.
Yeah.
In fact, Photoshopping photos is in itself fun and
yeah.
and not always vindictive, right?
It's right, right.
The whole point is not is to make a joke out of it.
Right, right. Yeah. Right?
So you guys are showing it's like these videos are possible and the more people know about it, the more they can recognize
right.
that it's real or not real, or at least question whether it's real or not mm-hmm. real.
Right, right. Yeah, so this last month we invited at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
In Davos,
to,
yeah, I saw yeah,
yeah. demonstrate the now this deepfake can be done in real time.
Right.
So basically, yeah. So now this technology is being discussed on the same table as like climate change and other
right.
things by the world leaders and yeah, those industry leaders.
Do you have concerns about the technology?
So right now people are careful about not putting the source code to online because then people can. Use this for like you know disinformation and like about other bad things.
But if you guys did it, someone else could discover it too, right?
Well, so we never release our source code. That's
sure.
too dangerous.
Okay.
So that's yeah, and also at the same time we developed technology to detect the deepfakes.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of how the algorithm works.
Okay. But isn't that kind of you're playing both sides? Because if you're creating technology to detect the deepfakes mm-hmm. and you are creating the deepfakes, can't you then make the deepfake technology better so it can't be detected?
Yes, exactly.
You're creating the virus yeah. and the antivirus at the same time. Right.
but I think that's also like, I think some researchers discuss this, some like rules, like when a researcher work on this thing.
Right.
So I think one of them was saying if the researcher work on the this creation tech, they're also responsible for developing the technology to detect it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think eventually that detection won't be a single cure. It's not because I think eventually it will be impossible to detect it. I think eventually it will be like very good to
When do you think that's going to happen?
Well, if it's offline, I think it's some videos you can't even tell. Yeah,
right.
So I think so educating people is very important.
Yeah.
Also, the detection tool is just as a measure of how authentic this data is or not, right. Just as a measure. And also, you know, all the platforms, like Facebook, Twitter,
yeah.
They have to be careful about not spreading the fake news.
Right.
So those platforms are also like responsible for like taking care of like what's authentic or not.
Right.
Yeah, there's a study like fake news spreads faster than the, you know, like real news.
Right.
Also the like regulations on the law by lawmakers.
So yeah, I was gonna, okay, so I'm gonna get into that. So these techniques, so a lot of the deep fakes that you see there, like the ones done by like control alt face or control shift face, sorry. That's using open source software mostly, right?
Right.
So that's out there.
Right, yeah.
So you're just talking about source code. It's out there. It's possible. And right. Probably a good artist, and he knows what the possibility between what you know, he's very good at using that open source software, but it's still open source software. Mm-hmm. So you can't remove that from the internet.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So you also can't regulate that.
Right. So there are like good use and bad use.
Yeah.
Like this is just you know, like Photoshop can be in good,
useful.
Good and bad.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. But some reports say that currently at 96% of the deepfake are like porn videos.
Right.
So which is, you know, obviously harmful.
Right.
So I think there needs to be some form of like regulation to like misuse the technology.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I brought this up with YL as well, right? Mm-hmm. It was interesting. So 96%, you said, of deepfake technology is being used for porn videos, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that the deepfake is to blame. It's the person, is the act of what they're doing with the deepfake.
Exactly.
So you regulate, if it's being used for malicious things, then that should be regulated.
Right, yeah.
Because there are other uses of that technology that are beneficial.
Exactly. Right,
what are those?
Well, entertainment
is
obviously, because you know, it's, you can create a realistic face.
Right.
Entertainment, VFX. It's like a virtual assistant.
Virtual assistant.
If you.
Uses. I know this is Mike Seymour's big thing, right?
Yeah. basically, if you just put this together with some like a speech synthesis, also you can have a like someone talking.
Yeah,
with a realistic face.
Yeah.
So the technology itself has just
lots of
potentials, but there is also, it's because it's so powerful, it can be used for something bad too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of bad things that happen on the internet. That doesn't mean we have to take away the internet.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about, when we were looking at the WikiHuman data, and when I was working at DD way back in the day, and we were creating these digital humans with super high resolution scans, and every time we got, you know, every time we got better and better data from the light stage, from ICT, the data set would get better and better and better, right? Mm-hmm. But it was still a lot of work to get there.
Right.
And the big challenge we were always dealing with was the uncanny valley problem, right?
So
the uncanny valley problem is like, digital humans, all right, are we going to be able to get out of the uncanny valley? Mm-hmm. That seemed to be like the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at this deepfake idea, do you believe that you would be able to come out of the uncanny valley or tackle that and create a very realistic digital human without dealing with that data set?
So I...
And actually, for VFX, could you do VFX of a digital human and be out of the uncanny valley completely using
that technology? So this technology is more like starts with the other side of the uncanny valley, right? Because it starts from the real human,
right.
So it's already crossed,
right.
And then Yeah, but the traditional one, it has to like build up small things and then it has to pass the valet some time. But now this technology just comes from the other side.
So basically, you have to keep it so good that it stays on the right, right side of the valley.
Yeah. Because the data given is the like videos or images.
Okay.
So the it learns how to basically mimic those like identities, humans or expressions.
Right. So, but do you think, okay, do you think, for example, you could use this technology? I'm just going to come up with an idea, mm-hmm. right? Let's say you wanted to create a digital, you have to create a digital human of some kind, right? Mm-hmm. You want it to look like a specific person. So let's say I'll just use me as an example. I'm mm-hmm. going to be an actor in a film, and you want to create a digital version of me for some reason you're doing there. Mm-hmm. Can you make a digital version of myself that's pretty close? Doesn't mm-hmm. have to be perfect. It can mm-hmm. be okay. But then use the deep learning mm-hmm. and a deep fake technique using my face mm-hmm. to manipulate and make the other face look better.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
And that means you're not actually rendering that face the mm-hmm. traditional way. It's mm-hmm. being derived from pixels. I'm not ray tracing, subsurface scattering, and putting bump maps.
Yeah.
It's all being done on the network, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you think that could be possible?
Yeah, that can be possible, yeah.
And it will look better?
I think so, yeah. So, okay. Problem of these top-down approach is because it's so top-down, it's not easy to control.
Right.
Add some like subtle smile or like change the lighting.
But maybe you could use your technique you used before. So once you've done it, then you can add a little more smile.
Right, yeah.
Using your puppeteering technique that you talked about before, right?
Right. So yeah, adding more controls are very useful for like VFX and graphics applications.
Okay.
So in a traditional approach, you can probably get like, you know, like first 70%, maybe in like maybe 20-30% of your time. Mm-hmm. But as it goes, if you build up and getting closer to the final goal, it's getting less effective. So if you putting more time, but the improvements, the last like 20-30% is very difficult. Right?
Yeah.
But if you combine like this new learning technology, it can take you from that like 70% to
100.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So that's great because that's a very interesting problem to deal with. What about, you got the face. So who is your customer? It's not just people buying this on the App Store and you guys are making money from that. There's got to be other use cases that are going on here, right?
Right. So, I talked about virtual assistant.
Yeah.
The, you know, virtual assistant can be used for like many things, right? If you helping the like shopping online.
Yeah.
I can talk to a virtual assistant.
Sure.
And it can show you like recommend you like what to buy.
Sure.
Or like this is also a popular application, like virtual try-on.
Virtual trial?
Yeah, virtual try-on.
Oh, try-on, yes. Yeah.
So you can...
Oh, right. You create an avatar yourself and then put the clothes on.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So without traveling to the store, you can customize your clothing and you can do that.
Yeah.
There's a... like big application in like AR, VR.
Okay.
Avatar-based interaction for, games and,
Isn't there, that's what, what's the guys over there? Magic Leap, they're trying to create their assistant. Right?
Yeah. So, basically we need more digital people in.
Yeah. I think digital humans have a very big role to play in our future.
Yeah,
And it's not nefarious.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge has always been when you're dealing, because we deal with virtual people just even in a text box all the time, right?
Right, right, yeah.
So, but if they're able to, if you're able to see a face and you're able to communicate to them in some other AI method, it's maybe easier.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk to, you know, like we have a facial tracker already
right.
on the phone.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a lot more intuitive and... Yeah, you can even like customize the virtual assistant, like look or hair or
right.
yeah, appearance.
I think someone was talking about like someone was thinking about making a virtual assistant sort of in a house for some elderly woman and made it look like their grandson. So she would talk to her grandson. She knew it wasn't really her grandson, but she could say, oh, yeah, you know. It's like asking Siri or Google Assistant
right,
or whatever,
right.
but then it looks like someone familiar.
Yeah, it can be more personalized. It
can be more personalized.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a bad thing, I don't
think.
That's not a bad thing. Well, this is really cool. I think it's very important for people to know, you know, this technology works. The fact that you guys are creating it and also making people aware of it is really good. You know, if you are sitting there at Davos and showing people, because I saw the videos of you guys on CNN. Did you go to Davos or was it just how?
I wanted to go, but my son is 8 months. So
yeah,
I,
your kid's too small.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw the videos of you guys on CNN when they were demoing it to people and showing people how it worked. And it was done in real time, which was kind of interesting. Just to give people an idea what it was basically you sit in front of a screen, you see your own face in front of the screen, just like you're looking at a webcam of some kind. And then you pick a different celebrity that you want to look like. And then basically your face is replaced with that celebrity's face. So if you want to look at me and I say, I want to look like Will Smith, and then I'm suddenly I look like Will Smith, but I'm... That was kind of crazy. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, those are the subjects chosen by the conference.
The conference. I think it was it was really interesting to do that. I definitely believe that the type of technology that you guys are creating is an important part. It will. I can't wait for it to be used in the visual effects world as well. I think that people keep talking about that. That's going to be very interesting, but also sort of keeping people aware of that, you know, that, the most important thing I think is, to show people that this is even possible. Have you seen the Corridor Crew guys, YouTube videos? They made the deep fake of, Tom Cruise coming into their office.
Maybe. Yeah, I have.
It was, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty interesting. But what they did there is they like, hey, it's virtual Tom Cruise or, you know, or fake Tom Cruise coming in, but he looks like Tom Cruise. And it was pretty good. But they basically told you this is fake. So then people are aware of that technology.
Yeah.
They also did another one, which was for, they took the visual effects. Do you remember the movie that was a sequel of The Mummy. It was The Scorpion King. Do you remember The Scorpion King? And it was a really bad CG version of The Rock.
Yeah.
And they used deep fakes to fix him.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Also, there was one from the Justice League.
The Justice League.
At the beginning. So the Henry Cavill.
They took the mustache off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, those are the fan usages, but I think, I'm sure it will be very useful for
Actual, I think it's interesting technology to think about. I'm not sure if people, how it can be regulated. I don't think the technology needs to be regulated. I think the use of the technology needs to be regulated.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, there are different kinds of, deepfake technologies.
Right.
So the most, probably most popular type of deepfake is the face swapping.
Yes.
So, I can put Will Smith's face on my face, right. But the rest of the like body and everything is me.
Right.
That's called like face swap deepfake.
Right.
But also some technology can drive the entire video.
Okay.
So, like, say you have a single picture with like a upper body and hair,
right?
And with the background, so then you can animate the entire video or image,
right?
Yeah. So it's called like Puppet Master Deepfake.
Okay.
Another kind of deepfake. This was famous. Do you know the Obama's?
Yeah. This Gordon Peele one.
So I think that's Jordan also Peele, related. So the original paper came from
that one's about mouth manipulation.
Yeah, so that right. one is only the mouth region.
Right.
So the rest is basically the real Obama.
Right.
So it looks maybe it can look most natural.
Right.
So that's called like a lip sync deep fake.
Yeah.
But it needs to, work with the like a sound. So it has to work really well with the lip sync.
Yep.
But yeah, so there are like all kinds of different, deepfake techs.
Yeah. But I think let's use that as an example, right? Mm. In the early days of visual effects, lip syncing wasn't always very good,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
But now basically you could say, don't worry about it, and we'll just do all the lip syncing using that technology.
Right.
And it's pretty convincing.
Yeah. And like rendering the teeth with occlusions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It can be done.
It can be done.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, when we worked on the detection paper, so because the way they work, some are easier than others. Like for example, lip sync one. This part, the mouth part, was only the like fake video.
Mm-hmm.
So without sound, it can be more difficult to detect the fake video. But the face swapping. So basically, we have only the face mask.
Right.
So still,
you can detect the edge of the mask.
Right. Yeah. So it's not very still mature. So you need to do some kind of work to composite to the background. So some are easier to
detect than others.
Right.
Interesting. This has been really good and very educational. We're actually just about an hour, so it's perfect mm-hmm. timing. But Cookie, this is fascinating work. Love to follow stuff. So if anyone wants to know more about the different tools that Pinscreen has got, they just go to pinscreen.com, I'm assuming,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And there's some really cool stuff there. There's a lot of stuff on the news about Pinscreen as well. I'm sure you guys can follow that. We're in a world right now where a lot of people are concerned about where this technology is going and what is going on. And I think it's we have a responsibility, like we're doing right now, to educate everyone so that they know that this is possible. And the more they know, the less scary it will be because they'll be able to use their education to make that assumption. So. Mm. I think it's very important that we have these conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Cookie, for doing this. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.